everybody. Welcome to No Story is Sacred. If you've never listened before, basically we're four siblings who grew up talking about the art of storytelling. Now that we're adults, we're still talking about it, and we're inviting you to join the conversation. I'm Kat, and I'm definitely a writer who can afford to go to charity auction after charity auction. That's normal, right?
Totally normal. I mean, we do it all the time.
Constantly. Every writer I know.
$500 a plate? Psh.
Easy.
Done. I'm Brendan, and I remain unconvinced that writers can tell lies to people that easily.
We can write the lies.
Telling them is something different.
I am Pippin, and I want to watch The Princess Diaries too.
Well, we all live lives full of regret.
And I'm Alex, and a gun range is definitely the place you'll find a bunch of writers.
Well, I mean, maybe one or two.
Depends on the state. Well,
I could see that.
One or two. You'll find maybe one or two. One will be there, you know, definitely because of their four guns. One will be there for doing research, but around like five, six.
Yeah, I'm surprised that they only went to a bar like once. Anyway.
Yeah, that bar should be every single scene, let's be real.
Yeah.
but on the subject here, why are we talking about writers and...
If not obvious from our introductions, and why would it be? Everybody, listeners, it is Moss Chris, which means that we are watching something that has an actor named Chris, in this case, Chris Evans.
Could have been Chris Pine. That's all I'm saying. Could have
Christopher Lloyd. I mean, come on. Back to the Future? Shit.
Yeah. Golden opportunity lost.
But sorry, audience, you're having to deal with today's movie, Playing It Cool. The summary of which, from Google, is a love-struck man enters into a platonic relationship with a woman who's already engaged to someone else. This is not an accurate... I mean, it is, but it's not...
It's not full. But really, do we want to dwell that much?
Actually, if that was the plot, if they'd stuck with that, maybe it'd be better.
Yeah.
Here's the thing. I'm just going to launch right into it. In this film... You could see these snippets of, like, something much better.
Could you?
And then, like, psh, that's a cliche.
Fun story about this movie. I did a little bit of background research.
Ooh. Cheater.
And here's what I discovered. This was actually on the blacklist.
Oh, that's sad.
Back in as far as 2011.
Aww.
It was called a mini splintered thing back then.
I like that better.
Mm-hmm.
I was watching the movie and thought to myself, it's trying real hard to be 500 Days of Summer. And it's also failing super hard.
In 500 different ways?
Yeah.
I feel really bad because I happen to know that Chris Evans really, really loves rom-coms. Like, he's mentioned it in interviews. It's something that he's really interested in. And I love him as an actor to death. I desperately hope that someday I can write a rom-com that I can pitch to him. Because honestly, I hate to say it, his taste is abominable.
True.
Yeah.
And I mean, I take this as a challenge. Oh, I do appreciate that he does manage to get his brother into these films. Scott Evans makes an appearance.
I was looking for him because I saw his name in the... actor this somewhere, and I somehow managed to miss him still.
He was in one of the very early This Is Why romantic comedies are baloney fantasy sequences.
Oh, see. I didn't realize that Scott Evans was in it until I think after that part. So
No.
Because I got bored halfway through.
Only halfway.
I'm ashamed that you can't recognize him immediately. Pip, what kind of fan are you?
I just looked up at the blacklist listing for it. Mm-hmm. It got 17 votes.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, when a charming heartbreaker finally meets a girl he can't have, he discovers the true meaning of love by living out other people's love stories and writing his own.
That's more accurate. I think that one's more accurate.
Yeah.
And it sounds like it might be a good movie.
Yep.
It sounds good on paper, but in practice...
Instead, what we got was this bullshit.
Okay, so Chris Evans plays a screenwriter who has been hired to write a rom-com, and for some reason, unlike every other writer in the known fucking universe, he doesn't realize that rom-coms are formulaic, and it's pretty easy to just figure out what your story beats are. Instead, he starts being all like, what do I do? I don't know. It's all fake. I guess I don't want money.
At the start, he was all like, how can I do it? I've never been in love before. And I was all like, fake it like the rest of us, you dickbag.
Yeah, I mean, come on. It's like, I've never, you know, gone climbing up the Nakatomi Plaza building, but I'm sure that, you know, the writer of Die Hard had a pretty good imagination about it.
Yeah.
Christ.
Mm-hmm. I mean, has any of you reached into a man's chest and pulled out his still beating heart?
I mean, not recently.
No, but vivid daydreams about it.
Okay, so he's busy, like, bitching about this, and he's like, I guess I'll go and do something boring with my life, like attend a charity dinner, which, of course, I do regularly as a writer. Maybe screenwriters do. Maybe they have that kind of money, but his other writer buddies don't.
Maybe he was doing it for her, doing it as a standard, her making connections things, except he already has a connection.
He has an agent.
He has connections out the ass.
What?
He got a contract job.
Yeah.
For something he's clearly not qualified to write, apparently.
Oh, my God.
And he's clearly friends with I want to say agent?
I think, no, that's definitely his agent. So he's got one of those.
Played by Anthony Mackie, whom I love, but also wanted to punch in the face.
Anthony Mackie was, no.
Yeah.
In my notes, I was like, I wrote, we're not even 3 minutes in yet. It's sexism and racism and what?
Asian stereotypes. We've already had creepy underage rape scenarios. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
It's fantastic.
In the first 5 minutes. Yeah. But... And this is like one of those weird things that, you know, kind of irritates me in movies kind of like this, where this, where the sexism on the sleeve, I guess. I don't really talk with my guy friends like that ever. We talk about like Smash Brothers.
And also in public.
Oh God.
In a professional setting, no less.
Nope. I mean, maybe there, but it's locker room talk, guys. Locker room talk. Clearly, some people do talk like this because, frankly, we've had to be subjected to it in the news. However, I think that maybe those people should not be seen as positive characters in a rom-com.
You think?
Not associated with a main character, no.
Yeah.
Guys?
Yeah.
Guys?
Yeah.
I have a confession to make.
What?
Oh.
I could not finish this movie.
Good.
Wow.
Wasn't that great?
Wait. Al?
Yeah.
Make a prediction for how the movie ended, and then we can confirm
what happened. Okay.
Wait, first of all, how far did you get?
I got as far as the charity dinner at the beach with Patrick Warburton.
Wait, so where he has to stand up and tell his lies some more, and then the girl's there?
Yes.
Yeah, he hasn't even met her for the second time.
Dude, you clocked out early, before the negging.
Well, guys, you know one of my things that I cannot stand.
That's true.
It's web of lies in social situations that I would not be comfortable with. Such as, you know, a charity auction while I'm standing at the podium. And it's compounded by the fact that I hate this guy.
And there was some secondhand embarrassment stuff going on.
So, like, I do not want to put this emotional effort into this. And, like, nope.
And this is an important lesson. That when you're watching things or reading things, you are allowed to nope the fuck out.
Nope.
You are not obligated to finish whatever you're reading or watching or whatever. Life's too short.
Mm-hmm.
I'll admit, I pretty much checked out of the movie in the latter part of it.
I've watched this film twice.
Oh, I pity you. Like, I played it, it's just, Yeah. During the climax of the movie and people are still primarily talking with each other as you're building up to the big climactic moment at the end.
Uh-huh.
I'm like, oh, okay. I can almost imagine what they're talking about. I hate to complain too much because writing scripts is freaking hard, yep. But,
but no, my predictions for how it ends, his web of lies got caught, so she's pretty much later boy, but he redeems himself by writing the perfect rom-com script. It's also moving, and he comes back and's like, I was wrong about you. You have clearly grown. Now you are welcome to my pussy.
Ew, the word pussy was used way too many times in this film.
Way too many times. I made a note about that, yeah.
Way too much.
This is not... pussy is no longer a word that you can just throw around. You gotta really mean it when you lay it down, as it were. I've already used it too many times.
Yeah, and here I was using it to show how crude this movie is. It's like, with its emotional heart or whatever.
Would you believe, Alex, that his screenplay has no bearing whatsoever on his relationship with this girl at the end?
Oh. And nor does the liar revealed plot really either.
No,
she stops talking to him.
Yeah, briefly, but I mean, it's not as you know, she's all that. Was I a bet? Was I a fucking bet? It was. That's not reaching that level of glory.
Yeah. Nope. Oh, man, that was a great scene, though.
See, that's an amazing reveal. Like, you know it's happening. You know it's coming. And you're like, yes. Thank you.
You just can't stop it.
Well done. It's like when you're reading a story or watching a movie and they're like, oh, no. They have to stay overnight somewhere, and there's only one bed?
There's only one bed!
What are they gonna do?
I mean, I don't know, but there's only one bed!
The heat died, too.
Or it's oh no, fake dating. But will they fall in love? Like, here's the thing. You know what the answer's gonna be. Like, if it's I'm telling a web of lies, somebody's going to find out. They're going to find out. That's the point of the story. People still like it. But if you're not going to just really make it work, then there's no fucking point. And they didn't make this work.
Wow.
Remind me. Did the web of lies falling apart happen before or after he got drunk and threw a rock at her?
Which time?
What?
No, the first time he threw the rock at the other people.
Okay,
he wasn't drunk at the time.
I believe the being drunk and throwing a rock happened later, because according to my notes, I have the you're a liar reveal isn't strong, followed a few lines down by stop being a fucking stalker, JFC.
Yeah.
Oh, I have stalker written in my notes, too.
Actually, what's funny, you know what happens a lot in my notes?
Mm.
Yeah?
Why is she interested in him? Why? Later on. Why? Later on.
Well, because
why?
Because it because they have such banter?
Actually, I think that there was a sort of through line about how basically she's self-hating and disastrous. And weirdly, that would make her interesting if we were getting any of it from his understanding. But Topher Grace, who is better than this and deserved to be in a better movie.
I spent the entire movie going, man, I want this story from his point of view. He's better. I have somewhere in my notes, Scott, the character, is better than the rest of these people.
Oh, yeah, he is.
Do you want to know something else about this story, you guys?
Yeah.
What?
Tell me what the lead's names are.
He's billed as me and her.
Oh, God.
Oh. wait, do they actually tell their names?
Well, yeah, no. You have to. Chris Evans is billed as me. What's her face? Is billed
Megan
as
Megan Moynihan.
Yeah,
Moynihan
is billed as her.
Right, and when he steals a book, he never actually he says her what her name is. He just makes fun of other women's names.
Yep.
Yeah.
He's great.
Mm-hmm.
If they were clever, they could have gotten across more how it's supposed to be, so you can insert yourself into his story. If they were better.
But getting back to Topher Grace, one of the things that he did a great you're an asshole speech. Like the, Topher Grace's you're an asshole speech was great. That was right up there with what you're an asshole speeches should be. His point was that everything's about you. And you never think about anybody else. And that should be a turning point, and it isn't. It's still all about him, even at the fucking end.
None of the other writers really play into the climactic ending either.
Mm. Which is too bad, because they were the only decent, like...
They had Aubrey Plaza. Aubrey Plaza, man.
That was another one of my notes. Oh God, Aubrey Plaza, why?
I said, you and Griffin, you're better than this too. And then I said, Matthew Morrison, no, you deserve this.
And was that Jason Lee?
Might have been.
Might have been. I'd have to look it up.
And like, yeah, that makes sense. That tracks.
Is it just me, or I kind of like Topher Grace as an actor nowadays? I think he's criminally underrated.
Yeah, Topher Grace was great in this movie.
He was the only great character. I will possibly backed up by Aubrey Plaza.
Yeah, I kind of want his movie.
Yeah.
I liked Topher Grace's character when one of his opening lines, at least in the flashback to his opening, was, "Don't hurt me, I'm a writer."
So accurate. So accurate. Also, frankly, sitting like going around leaving copies of Love in the Time of Cholera is such a bullshit writer thing to do.
Right?
Yeah, that was a believable writer thing.
I know, but like it's the kind of writer thing that you're like, yeah, no, I know people like that. And weirdly, I did appreciate all the writer parts. The people who weren't Chris Evans, I don't agree with where they were hanging out, but I'm like, you know, no, it's true. Like, writing is a lonely business, but we are oddly drawn to one another. Mm. And then when they spend that whole time being like, no, I've written that story. No, I totally wrote that story.
That's believable, yeah. Yeah. Just then when they start talking about, like, views on romance and all that, yeah, and they have that kind of connected to the emotional through line of the movie, which is inherently awkward and weird.
When
and
they
like,
stop talking about being writers, that's where it becomes bad.
They stop talking about, like, writers and start talking like
screenwriters.
Weird people.
Like characters in this fucking movie.
Yeah.
Except for Topher Grace, who never stops being awesome.
Yeah.
The moment we met Topher Grace in the movie, I wrote in my notes, I need one good reason why Chris Evans and Topher Grace shouldn't make out.
There was none. There was no good reason.
I have one good reason.
Oh, Alex, you missed this. Topher Grace is gay in this movie.
Oh. That would have been important to establish fairly earlier on.
Actually, I appreciate that they didn't. No, he's trying to flirt with the dude in the bookstore. I appreciate that. That's why he's being like, that's why it's love. I appreciated that that was like not an important thing. I didn't appreciate the random homophobia and transphobia that we got later. But, you know,
it kind of
makes me wonder whether or not the Topher Grace character was based on one of the author's, screenwriter's real friends.
Of course.
Probably, yeah.
Just because he was really well developed, you know?
More developed than, like, all the other characters. Like,
basically, yeah.
I mean, I have written in my notes, I kind of want to hear this debate about what's more romantic, Terminator or Ghost. But I'm going to need to see them put the work in. 10-page paper by next Friday.
I actually have my notes. Terminator is totes a love story. Fight me.
Wait.
He can't agree
I'm calling a pause on the podcast right now. Quick, Pippin, justify your choice there. Terminator as romance story.
I mean, to be fair, it's been a while since I've watched it. But I'm still going to explain myself. I'm just saying, you know, reasons why I don't remember anybody's name except for Sarah Connors.
And Reese.
Is Reese the dude who travels back in time?
Yes.
Awesome. Cool. So, what we have there is, this really tragic romance because he goes back in time, to save the leader of the revolution, the mother of the leader of the revolution, and then realizes that she is her own person who is in trouble and actually really cool. And it's this tragedy because he knows that it's not going to work out. But you know what? It can't deny the thing that's going to make them happy in the moment in face of certain of possible death. Because the future is always coming for you. Love in the moment.
Love in a time of Terminators?
Yes.
And that was Pip's TED Talk.
You, me, the 6 foot Austrian, muscle bound Austrian, and missing half a face.
Yeah,
it's like a candlelit dinner, really.
Yeah.
Okay. Returning back to playing it cool.
Ugh. Basically.
Here's the thing.
What is it?
That I kept on seeing things that I really want to see separately, like divorced from this movie, such as the personification of the lead character's heart.
Mm.
Oh, I did like that.
Yeah, it was stylish.
Yep.
And it's like such an excellent idea, being followed around by the by your emotions as personified.
Mm-hmm.
So just imagine, you know, where that's the
story through line.
Yeah. You go through life, but we're also being accompanied by 5-10 assholes that represent our emotions. Not like an inside out, but like, but more outside.
And then the cover could have been Chris Evans, you know, wearing black, smoking, and setting fire to the romance side.
Which was great. I really liked that.
That was aesthetic right there.
Oh, yeah.
It's just...
Man.
Kat, do you have any opinions on the hotness of Chris's heart personified?
I mean, I think it's... I do think it's one of the good parts of the movie. I feel like...
There's lots of, like, good potential here.
There's also some great cinematography.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot of, I don't want to say writer in-jokes, because it's not quite the right kind of in-jokes.
True.
Mm. Yeah.
But.
Might be among screenwriters, but
I
don't know.
Yeah, that one, I don't know.
Yeah, I had some trouble with that.
But it seemed to, like, for instance, okay, so one of the things that we see is that he talks about the cliches of rom-coms, and this film seems to be trying to make a point of taking those cliches and either running with them or showing that they're pointless or inverting them or something. I say something because I don't think they did it successfully.
You want to know what did it really well? And I think we mentioned it already. 500 Days of Summer. They explicitly went about writing that screenplay. Mm-hmm. Like, what are the cliches? Okay, how can we ignore them or turn them on their head? And they made it work.
That's why I was partway through the movie and got a 500 Days of Summer vibe. But they were doing it bad.
That definitely seems like the vibe that they were aiming for.
Yeah.
Was quirky rom-com independent type of movie.
Mm-hmm,
but there was just so much misogynistic aggression.
Yeah.
Like trying to be a rom-com for dudes.
Bro.
Bro.
Hey, you know what? Hey, bro.
Bro.
Let's talk about sex, because that's all we can ever talk about.
Say, Al, have you unlocked any new characters in Smash Brothers yet?
I'm working on Spirits Mode, you know?
Oh, yeah. That's a fun way to do it. It's a fun way to do it. Not the most efficient, but yeah.
Chicks. That's all we ever think about. Yep.
Pussy. Yep. I'm sorry, guys. I feel dirty doing that.
You weren't the first one to go blue cat, though. Don't worry.
Hooray!
A lot of my notes are just literally me writing, ugh, or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah.
So a couple of ugh moments I had as well, kind of related to things that occurred. So part of the reason why Chris Evans's emotional core there is so broken, I guess, is that his mom left when he was a kid.
And died simultaneously. No. I heard that she died.
I think that was a slip up. I think that was something from an earlier draft. I think originally the mom died.
Because that makes more sense.
And then, And then they probably have an emotional core because his mom died, her dad died. Ooh, hey. But I think they changed it such that she left instead.
Yeah, and I have written in my notes, you see, he has a chip on his shoulder because his mom left and took the cereal prize with her. And that's his excuse for being an asshole.
His heart. Huh.
And then he got raised by his grandpa. Yay.
Who said the word pussy, like, a lot.
Yeah. And then they decide to kill him, too.
Yeah, I have a note about that. Like, dead moms, dead grandpas.
I was honestly surprised that, like, oh, and now we're at the climax of the movie. Oh, and all his writer friends were in the van and it crashed.
I would have liked that better. Everyone dies.
Topher Grace would have been in that van then. Don't do that to Topher Grace.
No, he has a day job, remember? He would have been at his day job.
True.
He can't afford $500 a plate.
Oh, Alex, the one thing you did miss, Topher Grace heckling Chris Evans during his fake speech.
That was true. That was pretty great.
Which was Topher Grace saying, like, you're not bombing at all.
Like a true friend. Oh, man. Topher Grace was too good for this movie.
Should I pick up where I left off and try again?
No, thank you very much. It's more like if you have to suffer, there's small rewards.
Yep.
One of my favorite lines was when Topher Grace and Chris Evans were hanging out with Granddad. And Granddad and Topher Grace were talking more familiarity than Chris Evans was expecting. He was like, do you guys hang out without me? And Topher Grace is like, I never had a granddad. Don't be selfish.
You know, I kind of feel bad because, like, I don't want to be overly negative about, like, the movie and all that.
You don't want to neg it?
Yeah, bro.
But, because I can fully understand how it's a tough task to get something from the page to being actually made. That's amazing. Good on you.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
It's a tough world out there. And the fact that you got it released even on Netflix at all, amazing.
It wasn't this came out in theaters. This was not a Netflix special.
I thought U.S. distribution was Netflix.
Nope, because I tried to go see it in theaters.
Maybe it was limited run.
It probably was limited run. But remember, this is Chris Evans. This is after he became big as Captain America. He actually is a theater draw.
Wait, this was after Captain America?
Yep.
This is after Cap.
Around the same time as Winter Soldier, even.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Which is why I was thinking, Chris Evans, you're too good for this movie. Like, Captain America, I would expect.
I thought this was, you know, Fantastic Four Chris Evans.
Nope.
Nah. So, side note, was her boyfriend, later fiancé.
Ewan Griffith.
Yeah, was that Mr. Fantastic?
Yes, that's Mr. Fantastic from the first Fantastic Four movie.
Because I also had a moment of, I would happily watch a movie of Johnny Storm and Mr. Fantastic fighting.
And we had the first Venom in this movie.
That's true. Oh, my God. Because Topher Grace played Venom. Eddie Brock.
Yep. A lot of Marvel alumni here.
Falcon's in there.
Mm-hmm. Proving that they, too, still need to make rent.
Aww.
Fight me.
That being said, I think he could do a romantic comedy like role, right? I mean, I think.
Oh yeah,
I think he just needs the right script.
Like, say a Christmas rom-com where he's actually a prince. who's also Santa?
Oh my God!
Also Santa. That's the name of the movie.
Yeah, I was about to say, is that the title of a movie? Because it should be.
Oh my God, guys.
Oh man. So do we have anything else to talk about this movie? We've gone all over the place. The guy and the girl do end up together, Al, just so you know.
I was right about one thing.
There are two good lines in this film that are said by Chris Evans. And I hate calling him Chris Evans in this because it's not like it's his fault necessarily. It's the character.
He didn't have a name.
That's a good point. I'm going to call him Chris Evans. Okay, so one of them is when he does that beautiful, like, high-pitched, fucking high five.
Yeah.
Which was great.
That one.
But the last line that he did that I really liked was, I'm willing to regret you for the rest of my life.
Yeah, I wrote that down.
That's a solid rom-com line.
Oh, yeah.
I was kind of mad about how good that line was.
I know. and it fits his character.
I wonder if that's the line that got it greenlit.
It's a good line.
Yeah.
It's a real good line.
But there's just so many problems, guys. There's so many problems.
Yeah.
It seems like it's a rom-com that happened maybe 10 years too late.
Because there's lots of really unhealthy romantic, quote-unquote romantic tropes. Negging, stalking.
His thing is either I expect, you know, maybe just an Apatow, but like, I think this steps over first lines even he hesitates on.
I feel like Judd Apatow's characters are still more relatable.
Yeah.
Like, I can't really relate to them, but I understand how other people could.
Yeah, like, It did feel like overall that in this movie, it felt like all the characters were characters rather than people.
Except for Topher Grace.
Although possibly he's the most character of them all.
Yeah.
It's like the characters can go into like really thoughtful dialogue and all that. It just felt like, I'm talking at the camera now. I better blah, 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 blah.
I will say that Mal, what's her head? I think that she did not go blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
Also, in my notes, I have written, listen, I weighed my options. Keep watching this, or old Whose Line Is It Anyway clips. There's a collection of Ryan and Colin and doing noir-style narrations. Go watch those.
Nice.
And that's my recommendation to you, listeners.
Did you know that there are seasons of the UK Who's Line on Hulu?
Yep.
Oh, yeah.
FYI. Yo, if you need a palate cleanser. Listening audience, I'm going to tell you, don't watch this movie.
Aw.
Don't do it. Life's too short.
Watch it for Topher Grace.
I will say, actually, that there is value in watching this movie. I think there's value in watching or reading anything, because at the very least, it can teach you what not to do. The very act of watching or reading something and then taking it apart has value. Case in point, our entire fucking podcast.
That's the point. Huzzah. That's the point here.
But we could have watched something fun and bad.
And why aren't we talking about this at a bar or gun range? What the hell, you guys?
We're bad writers, guys.
That's where I wanted to do this, but...
The next time we're all in one place at one time.
Also, wait, are there gun ranges that offer dining tables?
That also offer booze?
Probably in New Hampshire.
Yeah, okay. I grant you that.
That Woo! Also lets you fondle the guns at those tables away from the range.
Again, probably New Hampshire. Brendan's right.
New Hampshire don't give a fuck.
So, you guys, we've been talking at length about this movie now because,
I don't think we ever actually said what else happens into it in it because it doesn't matter.
No, we don't need to know.
It doesn't really matter. The guy and girl get together. Yeah.
It's dumb.
She was engaged. She didn't actually love the guy.
Or did she?
Yeah.
Like,
who knows? Yeah.
Well, that's a rom-com trope that needs addressing.
But does it need to be addressed by this film?
Well, no, not this film, but at large. Because, there's always the, I found my high love, but she's seeing someone else.
Oh, well.
Done.
Time to break up a relationship.
Ah, this will end happily for everyone involved.
Yay!
And I'll definitely never think of if it was so easy for her to break up with him, how easy is it for her to break up with me? Definitely never. That's definitely not going to happen within the next year.
Totally the basis of a healthy relationship.
Oh, guys.
Okay. So, are you guys ready to talk about what you'd change in the story?
Yes.
I'm not ready because I didn't watch this movie.
Yes, you can. Yes, you can, because you already came up with one, technically.
True.
I can kick us off if you want.
Do it.
Okay. So, first things first, aside from the more big story change here I'm going to talk about here in a second, I want to get rid of the narrations.
Oh, yeah.
Because... overuse of narration in film is a pet peeve of mine that I do not like because it is telling rather than showing. And we could probably establish all this stuff with dialogue with, say, Topher Grace instead and have a much more fun time.
Yeah.
Topher Grace.
And more Topher Grace.
And also, you don't break out in laughter in the opening scenes when he's like, I'm writing a screenplay.
But just imagine if he tells Topher Grace a fucking high five and seeing Topher Grace's reaction.
Good point.
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking there. Get rid of the narration. The only time when it's appropriate is if you're doing like Sam Spade, film noir, that kind of stuff. And that's just because it's classic.
Mm-hmm. We had the noir heart personification, but it didn't talk.
Well, also, it was never a character in any of his stories, which annoyed me.
Yes.
It would be great if it became the character in the story, and it never did. That would have been thematic.
Whoa.
See, it's finally putting himself in the story. Get it, guys? Get it?
Uh-huh. Get it?
Get it?
Get it?
Is he putting himself back in the narrative?
Wow.
This still isn't Hamilton episode, Pippin.
Just you wait.
I love everyone in this bar.
So the other thing I was that occurred to me as I was watching this movie is that the fun in the movie, to me, seemed to be like those story excerpts where we do get the kind of imagination land, not the let's all have 10 to 15 minutes of banter in a bar talking about stuff, talking about sex. Instead... yeah, I had fun seeing Chris Evans portray these weird vignettes. And if you're talking with a group of writers, maybe that could be interesting. So on that thread, I'm thinking It's almost like a Canterbury Tales kind of thing, where we have all the writers together. And
yeah, that's nice.
And it's like a writer's workshop. Who would do that?
What? And who does that? What?
And the thing that basically kind of comes together as you're telling the story, the stories within stories and all that, is building up to the reveal that Chris Evans there finally found love. He gives contributions to the stories, all that. I don't know, like, or has like the emotional connection to one character to another's little vignette. And I don't know, that's just what I'm trying to sculpt here. Is I want just the writers together. We get the banter. We don't worry about all this extra charity bologna. And we don't have to worry about the liar revealed subplot, not worry about cheating on a fiance plot. It's just, we, the audience, are the other writers in the room, and we're finding out that Chris Evans' character has finally found someone. How do we portray that in a script, in a story, in a film?
I weirdly feel like that's more of a play than a movie. Could be. But it would be an amazing play.
Yeah.
Could be. Yeah.
It might actually work out better as a play.
And through it all, we also see Chris Evans' character go on a journey of emotional healing.
Yeah, sure. Well, because, like, he is, through his contributions to the other people in the workshop stories, is revealing that, you know, he has doubts, he has all this stuff because, you know, he hasn't ever felt this way before. And like anybody in that mental state has a lot of insecurities. What writers with insecurities?
What?
Yeah. Sounds fake, but okay.
So it's almost becoming like a therapy session as well for him. I had fun watching the vignette type of things, with a couple of exceptions, of course.
Like the first one?
Like the yellow face one? That one?
Yeah. That was also transphobic.
Better written vignettes. How about that? But like that's in a film format or even a play with costume changes, that's where the fun could be.
Well, imagine, like, for instance, it's, you know, if it's a play, they're all sitting like in the center and then, you know, they all jump up to start playing these various.
Yes.
Yeah, like, I think that would be really cool. Yes.
And it also reveals one of those hidden truths that writers have self-insert characters all the time.
Oh, yes. Constantly. We're obviously, come on, guys.
Duh.
Wait, so as a play, do they briefly go off stage for a quick change, or do they do kind of just a stagehand comes up on stage and you dress them up as they're monologuing?
I'll leave that to the director of the play.
You gotta keep the magic alive somehow for the director.
Sure.
Because I think depending on the playhouse, they can handle one or the other pretty easily.
Yep.
Yeah. If they want to be creative with it, I'll totally let them.
You're very generous.
The thing is, I kind of like the plot structure of a Canterbury Tales kind of.
It's a classic for a reason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, also has a kind of Don Quixote movie kind of feel.
I admit it's one of my favorite tropes is the multiple stories being told around, and I've never been able to successfully make it work.
Aww.
Yeah, every time I try, I realize, oh shit, I'm fucking up the story. That and the Battle of Thermopylae. Every time I try to include that in a story, I'm always like, I've fucked it up again.
Thermopylae is oddly specific.
No, it's, you know, a tiny pass, and you have a limited number of people to prevent the ravening hordes from getting to where you're going. It's a good, solid battle to use to steal for a plot, and I've never been able to do it.
You know, one of these days, keep trying. I believe in you.
Thank you, Pip.
You're welcome.
Have you considered giving the defenders magic? There we go. Oh, that's
the answer.
And anyway, and I figure the last story is Chris Evans telling his story of meeting this person and maybe speculating where it could go.
Oh, that's a good ending.
You could also get like Mal, who is played by Aubrey Plaza. You could get her like revealing that she's in love with him.
Yep.
Get that whole thing. I don't know. I think this would make a great play. Because actually, I do not like the vignettes. I thought they were mostly offensive and poorly done.
Well, I was trying to find any bit of fun in the movie aside from dialogue, cheat on your boyfriend with me. Dialogue. Grandpa's dead? Oh. Dialogue.
That's really depressing.
Yeah. Tell me that's not the movie.
Yeah. Fair point.
Yeah.
People go to different areas to talk. Rather than doing stuff.
That's a damning criticism.
Yeah.
At least it's not the Star Wars walking slowly and talking.
Ah, true.
We're walking and talking, now we're sitting and talking, and we're sitting and talking.
Well, that's the thing, like, the actions didn't really do much. Anyway, I'm back to complaining about the movie again, but we're talking about changes.
Anyway, I like yours, Brian. Hey, Pip, your turn.
Cool. I was going to try to claim it anyway.
Sure you were.
Huzzah.
Well, no, because I was going to complain because Brendan's is pretty much, along with being about the vignettes, being about the other writers, which is what I was going to sort of talk about with the idea of found families, because I love found families.
They are great.
Huzzah.
Instead of doing that, because Brendan covered that, I'm going to fall back on a classic.
Oh, no.
I'm going to queer it up.
Wait, do you really want to pair Topher Grace with that asshole?
Listen.
Maybe love of a good man will help.
Maybe. And Topher Grace has been putting up with him for this long. Chris Evans might as well put out for it. Because clearly, Chris Evans is an asshole. But also clearly, he's the kind of asshole that Topher Grace likes. Up until the point where there's a line.
Also, it can work because Chris Evans' character has never been in love, and that's because he keeps on looking for it with women.
Yeah.
There you go.
That's what I was gonna say. You know, he keeps having these relationship problems, women never finds it, and there's a reason.
Oh my god, I really want to watch the movie where Topher Grace is like, listen, maybe it's not, you know, the girls, maybe it's you. Why don't we just go out on a date?
Well, here's the thing. In my version, Topher Grace does not want to be the guy that Chris Evans experiments with.
I'm loving everything you're talking about. Keep talking.
Because he cares too much about their friendship to risk it like that.
Oh my god.
But does he do? Okay, let's just go out for dinner and you show me what you do on dates.
That's how it starts.
Fake dating!
And then Chris Evans is like, oh shit, maybe this is why. And at that point, Topher Grace has to go, no, you know, this isn't happening because we're friends and we're not risking that. And then it's Chris Evans trying to convince Topher Grace, no, baby, we belong together.
No, but that makes him creepy.
He's already creepy.
Topher Grace is like, I'm going to help set you up with somebody, but you have no experience. We got to talk through this. We're going to talk about what you want out of a relationship. I'm incidentally going to talk about what I want out of a relationship. Maybe we're talking late at night on a couch on a rooftop, you know, like bros do.
What's up, bro?
And then, you know, maybe there's a mistaken kiss, you know, just to find out what guys are like. And then we're all like, shit, we go to separate ways. Can you tell that I'm rarely invested in this?
But I still want Topher Grace to have that marvelous you're an asshole speech.
Oh, yeah. We can just keep that straight out. Like literally, I think that you can just take it wholesale and put it right in there. Because it's all about what Topher Grace is looking for out of love. It's what he believes love is. And if it turns out that Chris Evans has totally not read the book, has never understood him, then can he really be someone for Topher Grace?
And really, it can contribute to the film.
Yup.
Woo!
Huzzah!
So anyway, my first thought is now my last thought. This movie should have been Chris Evans and Topher Grace the entire fucking time.
So to speak.
And all their writer friends either being really oblivious about what's going on or really invested about what's going on.
Oh, they
really invested.
No, it's a mix between the two.
Oh, nice.
Oh, yeah, there's like one guy that's like, what do you mean? I don't get it.
Mallory knows what's up.
She suspected all along. She remembers what it was like when they slept together.
Yeah.
Not impressive. She keeps going back to it because she's like, maybe it was just that one time. And then she's like, no.
So anyway, that's my fix.
Oh my god, I love it so much more than anything else I could have done.
I guess I'll go. while Kat recovers. Okay, I'm still going back to the heart because that was the one thing I liked. And I stopped watching the movie, so, you know. But this time, because actually, I wrote it down in my notes. Speaking of noir, one of the elements in this movie has, which I'm not going to know how it develops, is his heart personified as a chain-smoking cool guy. I would like to see a noir film starring Chris Evans looking like his heart in this film. So I want to see this film instead as a noir.
So you just want a noir character.
Okay.
This is based purely on the aesthetic of Chris Evans wearing black and smoking a cigarette.
I mean, I am there for that aesthetic. And also, I am intrigued by the idea of a noir romantic comedy.
It happened right? One night, but with Chris Evans.
Yeah.
By Topher Grace.
This thing hooked in. She had legs up to here. And a quick immune rom-com. I was to mix in with it.
She had legs up to here and bad ideas for men.
She had legs up to here and she had to go to Baltimore for her father's estate.
And it was Valentine's Day. She didn't have a date.
She had to fool her mother.
And tell her that he did, in fact, have a boyfriend.
Wait a second. That's the plot of Holiday Engagement.
Yes, it is.
And that's where I enter the picture. So where does it go?
It goes nowhere.
Okay.
Wait, because those rom-coms have the yuppie boy, the yuppie ex-boyfriend or the yuppie boyfriend or the yuppie fiancé,
mm-hmm.
Our noir detective goes, I can smell dirty money on him from a mile off. Goes to the marina to investigate.
I like the idea of a rom-com investigator. So he just shows up in romantic comedy situations and starts really digging into these relationships and finding out that they're all bullshit. Until he himself finds love. Ba-dum-bong.
The dame told her mother that she and her John were dating for a year.
For John?
I don't know,
John means something else, Alex.
I'm forgetting all the terms here.
That's okay.
She and her beau, or noir.
She and her man.
Oh, yeah.
Her old man. Oh, yeah, there we go. Dame was told her ma that she and her old man had been together for a year. But according to their Facebook status, they only met 2 months ago.
There you go.
Yeah.
Man. See, that would be a fun way of twisting rom-com tropes as opposed to what we have experienced recently.
Oh.
So, Kat.
Oh, wait, is it my turn?
Do you have any follow-ups, Ryan?
I don't really have anything to add to it. It just seems like a style, and I don't really know where it would go.
It's something I would want to experiment with.
In his defense, he didn't finish the movie.
Yeah.
That's true.
But I actually think that the story that you actually came up with, which is your alternate ending, which is where he comes up with a screenplay that does talk about love, and he's basing it on his experience, his feelings for this girl, and that's what makes her realize that he's legit. He's not just some asshole trying to ruin her life, for shits and giggles. I thought that that was a viable alternative to what actually happened. It made him being a writer make sense. It made it be on purpose. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't resolve the liar storyline, but, at least it does something.
Let's just ditch the liar storyline. It added nothing.
Yeah.
It wasn't a bet. It wasn't a fucking bet.
I also spent most of my rewrite energy on personified emotions following people around.
Legit.
Yeah.
Fair. All right, Kat.
Okay. Well, I think, for me, Pip's already won this one, hands down. Cause god damn, I would watch that and read that. You're I would welcome. Do everything with that. I may be thinking about that.
You would write that.
But I'm gonna go a slightly different direction. One of the characters that I really appreciated was Mallory, was the Aubrey Plaza writer.
Yep.
I think that, she was mostly there as, she was much like the rest of the writer group. She was just there for giggles. But the difference being that she's the one girl in the group, so of course, naturally, Chris Evans has slept with her. And I just think that she deserves to be...
Have her own movie?
Have her own movie and or be the heroine of this one. Fuck it. Maybe what needs to happen is Chris Evans gets infatuated with this mystery girl. This mystery girl has her own separate fucking life. She genuinely does want to just be friends, but she's got a, boyfriend, she's got a fiance, she's happy with that. Chris Evans is busy being an emotional, fuckboy about it. Whatever. And then you know, there's Mallory, and she's the one who sort of, like, is like, you are being an emotional fuckboy about this. And Chris Evans is like, wait, maybe I am. Who is the person who's actually been here for me all along? Who should I, you know, who actually do I feel an emotional friend connection? Which is, in fact, a kind of emotional connection, which he doesn't have with people, women generally. And then he's like, obviously the answer is Topher Grace. But then not Topher, you know, if Topher Grace isn't interested, then Mallory. And then Mallory's like, thanks. Wow. I'm like, was a chopped liver compared to this perfect girl. Do you even know her fucking name? Say it. Blah, 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 blah. And then you can get a really good, like, you get the I love you, confession from her. And then he freaks out, but in a productive way, as opposed to I'm just leaving now.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, she does show some growth. Like, even in this fucking movie, Mallory shows some growth. She shows that she, you know, she does just come out and say, you know, what her feelings are. And I just want to kind of capitalize on that and make it about them. And then meanwhile, the other chick can go and be happy in her actual life and not get fucked over by Chris Evans deciding that he's having, like, emotional feelings.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fair enough. Yeah.
Thank you. Good night. I got nothing else. That's what I got.
No, that's fair.
Thank you.
What about all the other writers?
I like them still as just side characters.
Yeah.
I like it when they talk about writing banter. Again, relationship banter I thought was cringy as hell.
But their writing banter was great. Also, just the general life. Like, the guy who is busy living in a van, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense.
And none of them willing to go into the van.
Yep, that makes sense. The fact that they're all – when they all sit around, we're like, let me tell you about the story I'm writing. And one's like, no, that's just like the story I'm writing. When they're doing that, I love that. I thought that was great. When they actually talk about being writers.
Instead of writing, like a real writer.
So do we have anything else to talk about playing it cool?
He never even fucking played it
cool. He never did. I mean, which, to be fair, could be the key. I could see that as a humorous line in that, you know, because fucking high five.
Oh, also having nothing to do with anything we've talked about, I would watch a movie of Ashley Tisdale and Matt Morrison, crime duo.
That was my original idea before I thought of Mallory. My original idea for changing up the story would be to make it not this story at all, but rather tell the story of the rom-com with the multiple personalities.
Oh, I'm not even talking about them and the multiple personality. I mean when he had the nightmare or whatever of them breaking into his house.
That was great.
And beating him up.
See, that's very
and
writer.
And Matt Morrison, like, threatening to... Matt Morrison threatening to slit his throat, and then, like, yeah, I'd watch this movie.
If only. All right. So if there's nothing else to talk about the movie...
Nope.
Are you guys ready for...
a game?
A game.
A game. A game. A game. A game. Everyone wants to play a game.
Pippin getting her musical moment.
All right. So any games calling out to you guys tonight?
All right. We could do a special appearance spy. Which, for those who don't remember, is what happens if a meta character or a character from another show, book, whatever, appears in this movie.
And I know exactly who I want. I definitely want to play this one. Okay. We've mentioned him a couple of times on this podcast. He is the writer's writer. He was such a great character that he ended up in two different television shows before they had to kill him off to stop. I want one of the writers in this writer buddy group to be Jose Chung.
From
The X-Files and from Millennium. He was too good a character to stay in one show. He's a hack writer. He's fantastic. Jose Chung, I'm pretty sure, is not his real name. And he writes just garbage, sensationalist dreck that makes money. And you can tell he was written by real writers because when he was in Millennium, he takes the main character from that show to a book signing in a bookstore. And the main character is looking around. There's no one there. He's like, is this normal? And Jose Chung looks at him and says, unlike serial killer profiling.
Writing is a lonely business.
And I'm like, yes. Yes. Thank you. he originally appeared in Jose Chung's From Outer Space. He was amazing. And so because he is the writer's writer, I want him to show up with these people. I want him to be yelling at Chris Evans for not writing his fucking book. Nobody mm-hmm. talks to him enough about that, I feel. That's one thing I noticed about his writer friends. None of them were talking about the fact that he has paying work and he's not fucking doing it. Like they do, but not the way writers do, you know?
Yeah.
Somewhere in my notes, yep. I just have, just write your fucking screenplay, you fucking narcissist.
Yeah. But I mean, the writer's suggesting, look, I'll do it, just give me a cut. Like, nobody's doing that.
My favorite line from that guy is, I believe, on my honor as a writer.
Oh yeah, that's a good one. This won't make it into your book, will it?
Listeners, writers have no honor.
The anti-Klingon, really. Springboarding off yours, Kat?
Yeah.
I'm thinking a young Richard Castle is with this friend group.
Yes!
Before he made it big.
Oh my god. He still thinks about this guy and his fucking screenplay. He writes it. Idly.
Yep. I don't know where else I'd go with it. I didn't really watch all the seasons of Castle. But,
nope, me neither.
but I do remember that I thought that the writer character in Castle was likewise pretty well written.
He was a proper writer.
Yeah.
And also, frankly, whoever was writing him had kind of knew something. Knew something was up. Because every once in a while you'd get these really interesting writer in jokes. Like, for instance, mm-hmm. the time that it was fairly, like, first or second season, when he had taken all of his typewritten manuscript and hung it up on strings around his apartment so he could stare at them from a distance. And I'm like, I know that story. I've heard that one. That's the kind of weird writer thing that, you know, it's like a what are they called? Not tall tales, but
legends?
Yeah, folklore, that kind of thing.
Apocrypha?
Yeah, something like that. Like, you do that in order to see where the lines are not lined, you know, where your pages are too short, where your paragraphs look funny.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that one's too long, that one's too
exactly.
short.
Exactly. I mean, I love that. That's, like, somebody who actually knew what was going on wrote that little thing in there. That's what's missing from this movie.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay, Kat. Yep. I just thought of my springboard.
Uh-huh.
Oh, no.
You know who's also a writer in the area? Nick Miller.
Nick Miller!
Nick Miller is a character from the television series New Girl, who defines himself as a writer and is very much not writing his book.
He's also a fabulous drunk and is writing some bullshit about, like, zombies. It's amazing.
Yeah, his first book is a very bad, very zombie-filled Z's for Zombie.
But he would hang out with that friends group.
Oh, yes. And his friends had also read his second book, The Pepperwood Chronicles.
Oh, my God.
And, oh, my God. His subplot in this is like, he's the one that's agreeing with Chris Evans here. Like, no, you got right with your heart. And he's using this as an excuse to not be writing the screen adaptation of Pepperwood Chronicles.
Yes. But also, they would all hang out in his bar.
Yes, they would.
Oh, yeah.
That would be the justification for the for them all.
Yeah.
Because, like, which character has run up the highest tab?
Ooh, not Topher Grace.
No, Topher Grace is for every drink.
Yeah. I'm going to say, the husband dude, the one who's married.
Yeah. I was thinking the same thing.
Wow. Grim for him.
Topher Grace buys two drinks at most and switches to water.
Oh my God. Topher Grace is too good for this world.
He's responsible.
On his birthday, he gets three drinks.
Ooh. Fancy.
Mal doesn't have a tab, but that's because she's conning other people into buying her drinks.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
And or Schmidt is buying her drinks in the hope that someday...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Schmidt is buying her drinks.
Never works.
Nope. Never works. And they keep telling him that, too, and he's like, someday.
Or it's well, his harebrained schemes to make CeCe jealous.
Yep. God, yeah. That's such a great, terrible show. I love it so much.
Right?
Okay, Pip.
So then there was one.
Speaking of writers.
Uh-oh.
You guys are going to get so mad
what
at me.
What?
What did you do, Pippin? What did you do?
Oh my god.
There is another writer, you know, in Southern California these days. You know, William the Bloody.
What?
Also known as Spike.
No!
He has his poetry.
He writes bad poetry about love.
He does.
Oh, God.
My heart expands.
Tis grown
a bulge in it. Inspired by your beauty, effulgent.
Oh, Pip, why?
And he wears leather jackets, but when he wants to impress a lady, he switches to Abercrombie and Fitch.
Yeah, he does.
He knows his audience.
Has very firm opinions about love. Because of that whole "you'll never be friends" speech he gives to Buffy and Angel. Mm-hmm. Because he looked at that whole mess and saw right through it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, first off, he kills all of these awful characters, but somehow Topher Grace survives because I want him to.
I mean, actually, like, naturally.
Yeah. So that's already a plus.
Yep.
Oh, I thought that he'd be, like, I thought you were going to be, like, putting human him in it.
Oh, no. It's still vampire him.
Oh, okay. All right.
Please. Come on.
Oh, honey.
Though, I can also see him falling into this bad writer's group.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yep.
And just them encouraging all his bad writer flaws. That's how he gets back into writing.
Yes, I want him to get back into writing.
Oh.
He and Topher Grace talk about Love in the Time of Cholera.
Oh, they fucking do.
Constantly.
Oh, yeah.
All the time.
Oh, did Spike eat the original writer?
Spike ate the original writer.
It was inspired by his life, actually, him and Drew.
Oh, yeah.
Except that, like, they raised the flag, but they took it down whenever they needed to eat.
They would. That's all I really wanted to add.
That's pretty good.
I just had a thought of a bonus one.
Go for it.
Bonus.
Jason Segel's character from Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
As the guy currently in a happy relationship. Just everybody else who's, like, upset in love and all that is just like, oh, this asshole again.
Oh.
I found my love using puppets.
Fucking puppets, man, again.
Basically, you name a writer character and we'll go like, let's see how this happens.
That's where I think one of the few true things about this film came out is that, you know, yes, writing is a lonely business, but writers do tend to try to congregate and because there's
and bitch.
Yeah, I mean, there's a certain turn of mind that comes with writing and, you know, very few other people kind of understand it. And so you do tend, when you find each other, you kind of gather.
Yeah. Mm.
And so that's why we're sitting here trying to add more writers to the mix.
Yeah.
Because that's hilarious.
And also because they're better writer characters. Speaking of which, it's just today, there was an email of one of my coworkers like, hey, I'm setting up a creative writing group. Who wants to join? I was like, click, I'm in.
Okay, there you go.
You find your own bullshit writing group.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then yell at the guy who's already got a fucking job and isn't writing.
You have a contract. You write your damn book.
Right.
Hey, Pippin, how's your book coming?
Oh, yeah, talk about it. I was sitting here hoping real hard that wasn't going to be the place this conversation turned.
I'd like to say, Pip, it wasn't me this time who brought it up.
True, but you would have gotten there eventually.
I would have.
Okay. All right. Do we have anything else, you guys?
I think that's it. That's it for me.
That's it.
Awesome.
Wow.
Cool.
So that was Playing It Cool.
It was a movie.
I think we were pretty cool on it.
I was about to make the same joke.
Oh my god, you guys were dorks.
Ha cha 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 cha.
Good job, team.
We survived.
That's all we can hope for. And as always, if you have a story to submit, head on over to nostoryissacred.com/submission. You can follow us on Twitter at nostoryissacred or send an email through contact@nostoryissacred.com. Your hosts have been Alex McDonald, Brendan McDonald, Pippin McDonald, and Catherine Crichton. Editing for this episode done by Brendan. Transcript done by Ashley DaCosta. Art by Jay Wolf. Show notes and transcript are available at nostoryissacred.com. Thanks for listening, everyone, and please rate, review, and subscribe to No Story is Sacred. You can also visit our Patreon page to support the show and get neat rewards at patreon.com/nostoryissacred. See you next time when we will talk about an original story idea by Alex. Until then, we're No Story is Sacred, and any story can be changed. This was Brendan.
This was Pippin.
This was Alex.
And this was Kat.
And we're No Story is Sacred.